Charm of Favor, Chapter 30.
"Excuse me, Rocky, I'm Herbert," said Herbert, putting his hand over his heart. "Yes, I remember," said Rocky. "I've been working with Lenny to follow some of the money that has changed hands in the past year or so. I think you'll find this interesting," said Herbert, motioning for Rocky to follow him to Lenny's cubicle. "What have you found, Lenny?" asked Rocky as they arrived at his cubicle. "Well, your boy, Herbie, has quite the nose for paper trails. Turns out that we may have a second government forming ranks. These two tabs I have open show the transfer of nearly $5 billion from various State Department accounts and matching funds coming in from Turkish sources, Ukrainian sources, and a couple of old Saudi sources, and a catalog of bank accounts moving equal sums of money into a budget chart of accounts that look very much like a government agency. Only it's not a government agency. Not on the books, anyway. It looks like there is a payroll for about 200 people with marketing and transportation accounts," said Lanny. "What the hell? None of that is legal. It almost looks like the Pentagon or the State Department infrastructure. What do you make of it?" asked Rocky. "The best I can determine, it looks like a replacement administration," said Herbert. "I know there was a coup attempt during the first 12 months of Trump's presidency, but I didn't know they actually put together a new administration. If I knew about this, there would have been some hangings, that is for sure," said Rocky. "If you'll recall, there was a flurry of congressional retirements and resignations during that time. I think they're getting out rather than keep the secret," said Herbert. "Sounds like people wanting to go while the getting is good," said Lanny, staring at his screens. "The syndicate bought the upper echelon of the FBI, the CIA, and the FISA court, and Obama had his closest officers unmask the names. It was the first time our own spies were used against our own government. That's why they're running," said Herbert. "Rocky, I got the message to join you over here. Looks like we're going to punch a hole in I-65, said General Banks, walking up behind him. "What message?" "I didn't send anything. Jack went to see you from here, and she's not back yet," said Rocky. "She's coming here. Knorr's idea," said the general, tilting her head. "Oh, that kind of message. Okay, Lanny, let's see if you can get me on a guest list to this party," said Rocky, slapping him slightly on the shoulder. "Stay with him, Herbert. I need evidence for a trial. Understand?" "Yes, sir," they responded at the same time. "General, may I see you in my office? And tell Larson to grab Jack as soon as she arrives and bring her as well," said Rocky, pointing to Agent Larson's blonde hair over the cubicle on the other side of the room. The general let rank equalize when she was in Rocky's vaulted territory. A ship's command sometimes took precedent over superior ranks. He dispensed cold water into the empty bottle and took a long drink. His office chair felt new to him, and he sat and leaned it back. He closed the burning lids of his eyes and tried to think of the last day he had enjoyed a full night's sleep. "You can sleep when we're safe," he remembered the general telling him when he started in this division. His SEAL commander had told him once to never pass up an opportunity to nap. "Just make sure to wake up when the whistle blows, or you'll be packing your shit," he recalled with an exhausted chuckle. Within two breaths, he was asleep. He fell so hard that he dreamed he was asleep until he felt the hand on his arm. "Rocky, it's me," said Jack, leaning down close to him so she could speak softly. Oh, yeah. "Okay, where were we?" asked Rocky, taking a deep breath. "Are you okay?" "You were kind of talking," said Jack. "Yeah, been doing that for a while. Sleep deprivation has that effect on you." "How long was I out?" asked Rocky. "I don't know. I got here like 5 minutes ago, and Mr. Larson said I looked great. And then the general had us come in here." "Maybe 5 minutes," said Jack. "Plenty of time. Hey, Major Meade, good to see you again." "What's up?" asked Rocky. "Jack's got a message for the general," said the major, stepping back to the wall and leaning against it. "Let's have it, Jack," said the general. "Mr. Knorr said to tell you Pinnacle Javelin," said Jack. That's it, then. Where's the X-37B? Asked the general. We have about 45 minutes before we'll be able to deploy a rod, said Rocky. It might as well be a week. Where's the vehicle? Asked the general. It's about an hour south of Franklin, Tennessee, said Rocky.
You guys can't be serious. There are people in those cars, said Jack, pointing through the wall in the general direction of Tennessee.
How long before the NORC signal can fire the device? Asked the general.
Assuming he can't push the button himself, it will clear the horizon in about 30 minutes, said Rocky.
That is 12 minutes too late, said the general.
I said there are two people in those cars, said Jack, raising a voice.
Jackie, we know, okay? This is not your average IED. We can't just snipe this guy and be done with it. We have every reason to believe it will detonate with or without him. If we try to move anyone or isolate him in any way, he could detonate it. But if we could punch a hole through it, we might be able to fizzle it, said Rocky.
Fizzle? What the hell does that mean? Asked Jack.
By the way, your swelling has gone down a lot. Okay, nuclear devices are complex. We've never seen anything even close to this small. So it goes without saying that the NORCs figured out a way to do the mixing process with very small parts. If it doesn't mix, under pressure, at the right time, it fizzles. No explosion, no EMP. Get it? Asked Rocky.
What difference does that make? Asked Jack.
A small explosion of a few ounces of plutonium might get a little dirty and break a few windows for a mile or so, but if it gets enriched with some extra neutrons, it could create a pulse strong enough to knock out power for 500 miles in every direction, said Rocky.
It must have a power supply. The designs require about 20 horsepower to fire, said Mr. Larson.
I saw the high-res shots. Looks like a brand new Ingersoll Rand compressor.
Oh, wait a minute. The control panel. I'll bet that's the power supply, said the general.
We could hit it with a Hellfire from a drone, said Rocky.
We have 20 minutes, people, said the general.
25 minutes.
Did you launch a Reaper with that camera drone? Asked Mr. Larson.
Standard protocol. It's 50 miles away, said Rocky.
Where is he now? Asked the general.
Thanks to James and his Orange Barrel Army, he hasn't moved much in the last hour, said Rocky.
I'm authorizing you under the Pinnacle Protocol to take out the Javelin before it takes us out, said the general.
Yes, ma'am, said Rocky, tugging on the cuffs of his long sleeves.
Rocky, I get it. I really do. But those people that are nearby, they're going to be killed, said Jack.
Don't ever change, Jackie. I know. I'm hurting about it. But this is war, said Rocky, sprinting out the door and through the cubicle complex.
Jack, there is someone to blame for these lives we are about to take, but it's not us. If you have learned anything from our classes together, you should know this, said Mr. Larson.
I know. I just wish there was some other way.
Don't you have some magic shit you can do? Asked Jack, approaching tears.
There are no pixie missiles, Jack. Let's go find James, shall we? Asked Mr. Larson.
They walked out of Rocky's office and around the cubicle complex to find James slumped in an office chair. Hannah stood behind him with her hands on his shoulders as he slept.
Jack, hey, wow, you look pretty good. Still a little blue, but none the worse for wear.
Hello, Agent Larson, said Hannah.
James began to stir at the sound of her voice, slowly raised his head and rubbed his eyes.
Hello, Hannah. We came to see James, actually, the both of you, said Mr. Larson, smiling slightly.
Hey, Hannah, said Jack, not really focusing on the new conversation yet.
We're coming down to the wire now. I have a feeling they know we know about their little device. I think they may mean to detonate it when the North Korean satellite comes over the horizon.
Our assets may not make it in time to stop it, said Mr. Larson.
All of this? The whole runner thing and getting my ass kicked a couple of times, and we can't stop it? Asked Jack with her palms up.
Hold on, Jack. I think
Agent Larson has a point, said Hannah, putting her hand on Jack's forearm. Hey, Jackie, we're all together. I don't know what I would do if I was stuck in D.C. while you guys were here. As long as we're together, I think we can handle anything, said James, still shaking off the grogginess of being up for 2 days.
Yeah?
Well, we're healthy and locked in this safe house. But what about them out there? What about old people and babies and people who need electricity to stay alive? Why can't we stop this thing? Asked Jack, nearly crying. The Syndicate has been planning this for years, but I actually think they are rushing the schedule a little, said Mr. Larson. Hey, that's right. They expected Hillary to win the election. Now, Trump is messing up their whole game by turning America around and energizing the whole world capitalism thing. They're going to try to stop it while the recovery is young, said Hannah. You are one of the few who see that. So, you know, very complex technology does not like haste, but close does count when we're talking about nuclear weapons, said Mr. Larson. Except my orange barrel guy stopped the Pakistani from reaching his target and escaping with the rental car, right? Asked James. So, maybe we saved Nashville from being flattened, but the Pulse could still knock out 2/3 of our grid. We have no idea if we're ready for that, said Mr. Larson. I have a hunch that this is not just a terrorist attack. This Syndicate is planning something big, just like when Baby Bush unpacked the National Defense Authorization Act. We gave up our rights with a smile on our face, said Hannah. How hard do you think it's going to be to take the rest of them with a mushroom cloud as a backdrop? Asked James. Yeah, we're talking soup lines all over again, said Hannah. Well, now you know what we're up against. Stay alert, eyes open. Things are going to happen fast, and I need your team to be sharp, okay? Asked Mr. Larson. Yeah, I'll tell the rest to drink another cup of coffee. We'll be ready when you need us, said James, grabbing Hannah and Jack's hands with his. The X-37B is traveling at nearly 18,000 miles an hour. The rod must be released in the next 3 minutes to be steerable to the target. But here's the thing. That target can't move very far once the rod is deployed for it to be a direct hit, said the general. The probability is much greater if we're vertical, said Rocky. We don't have the time to be vertical. We need to deploy in the next 120 seconds, said Mr. Larson. What about the Predator? Asked the general. It was delayed. It won't arrive till after the NORC satellite has a chance to broadcast, said Rocky. Why can't I have a 50-cal chop that thing to pieces? Asked the general, raising her voice to battle command levels. Oh, we'll just pick one up in the next 2 minutes at Galleria Mall just up the road, said Rocky, reflecting back her battle voice. Just deploy the rod. We're out of time, said Mr. Larson. I'm saying that there are errors that will stack up if we do that. The lateral approach gives a 20% chance of hitting the trailer. We'll get close, and maybe the shock wave will be enough to blow it apart. But then there is the time error. This is a static kinetic weapon. That is to say, it's a stupid tungsten dart with steerable fins. Velocity is a variable based on unpredictable friction, said Rocky. So, you're saying that we could actually make the weapon more powerful by adding the kinetic shockwave to the blast? Asked Mr. Larson. They will constructively interfere with one another, said Rocky. So what can we do to stop this thing? Asked the general. Get ready to send in choppers and mobile hospitals, said Mr. Larson, turning to walk out of Rocky's office. Pull up the live satellite feed. Put it next to the drone footage, said the general. Wait a second. The Reaper's 10 minutes out, but this little camera drone is up there right now, said Rocky. Javelin. Hell yes. Put the crosshairs on that bitch and aim for the battery cabinet, said the general. Yes, sir, said Rocky, leaping out of the door to the surveillance control cubicle. Put that drone right into that trailer. I want that cable set cut in half. Can you do that? I'll have to make some program overrides. I can do that on the way down, said the operator. How long will it take? Asked Rocky. My guess is 3, maybe 4 minutes, said the operator. Can you punch it? Asked Rocky. It only flies about 100 knots level. It's designed to stay up for 9 hours and take pictures. It has a 14-foot wingspan that only weighs about 200 pounds, said the operator. If that's all we have, it'll do. 125 times 200 plus a little kerosene can ruin a garden party, said Rocky. I'm right above it at 12,500 feet. Here we go, said the operator. Firewall it, said Rocky. They watched the camera feed as the display time ticked off the seconds. Sir, the NORC satellite will clear the horizon in 1 minute, said Andy from over the cubicle wall. I need a minute or so to reach the target, sir, said the operator. Maybe they won't broadcast right away. They don't know this drone is approaching, said Rocky. They won't have another opportunity for 2 hours and 18 minutes, said Andy. Sir, if this guy had not been delayed, he would be driving away from Old Hickory about now, said Lanny. Okay, this is it. We have to take this guy out now. What's the ETA? Asked Rocky. My best guess is 45 seconds. He'll be able to hear it in a few seconds, said the operator. Sir, the horizon is coming up in 30 seconds, said Lanny. Stay on him. If he pulls out of traffic, stay on target. Hit that trailer dead center, said Rocky. I have him, sir. 10 seconds, said the operator. The screen with the camera feed went blank. There was no sound. Did we get him? Asked Rocky. The drone is offline. Could have been a delay in the feed, said Andy. Sir, that surveillance camera on the overpass we accessed a few hours ago is down as well. I think we have a detonation, said Lanny. Damn it. Holy Christ. Those bastards did it. Okay, team, listen up. I want system-wide diagnostics now. I want to know how big this event was. I don't care if you have to call the Kremlin to find out. Scramble a NukeMat team out to Clark, and let's get some long-range stuff in there. See what hospitals are still online. I need a report yesterday on this, yelled Rocky. Sir, I have a Foxtrot code from Greenland Operation Bearclaw, yelled Airman Ritter. Someone decode that Foxtrot. General Banks, you need to reach the president, said Rocky. They didn't check in, Rocky, said the general flatly. Sir, I have the Foxtrot code. Air Force 2 landed safely. Engine 4 was hit by a rocket. All hands safe, said the airman. Glad to hear it. Someone locate Air Force 1 and get me a Foxtrot code from that aircraft, said Rocky again. That's what I'm saying, Rocky. There was no check-in from the flight deck. We have to assume it's down, said the general. Sir, I have a short wave signal coming through, said the airman. On speaker. I don't have time for this, said Rocky. Again, in case you are just tuning in, this is the emergency alert system. There has been a nuclear attack in Middle Tennessee. Please remain indoors for the next 48 hours. Consume food and water that is already inside your home. Do not drink city water. Stand by for a statement from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, was the voice over the speaker system. What? Who is that? Where's that signal coming from? Since when does FEMA make any kind of public announcement? It's been less than 2 minutes. How could anyone even know what to say or that it was a nuclear attack? Yelled Rocky. Sir, that signal is being pinged from somewhere in Colorado, and the line is still open, said the airman. Rocky rubbed his short hair with both hands and tried to get a grasp on what was happening. It had been too many days since he slept. He looked at General Banks and then to Agent Larson. His cool demeanor gave him some comfort, but the answers would not come at this moment. Airman, can you broadcast on that frequency? Asked Rocky. Yes, sir, but they have it keyed, said the airman. Okay, so it won't duplex. If we send out a signal of equal power, no one will hear anything, right? Asked Rocky. I'm not sure, said the airman. In the absence of everyone in the constitutional chain of succession, just about any person in the bureaucracy could assume control, said Mr. Larson. What about the Secretary of Defense? Asked Rocky. I believe he is with the president, said the general. And for all we know, that could be at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico, said Rocky.
We know that is not true, said Mr. Larson. We know they didn't check in. We know a nuke of unknown size and power just went off in Tennessee. And we know someone is broadcasting like they have the authority from somewhere in the Free Republic of Colorado, said Rocky.
Yes. And we also know that neither the president nor his cabinet were on that plane, said Mr. Larson.
Yeah, and how do we know that? Asked Rocky.
There's another plane, said Mr. Larson.
Military? Is that legal? Asked Rocky.
Not exactly military. You recall Trump commissioned a new Air Force One when he was elected?
Well, it became airworthy a week ago. It's not even painted yet. They took off from Boeing's plant hours after the other two planes were airborne.
They've been in British airspace for the past 2 hours, said Mr. Larson.
So there were two decoys? Asked Rocky.
Yes. But now time is of the essence. Command and control are at risk, said Mr. Larson.
Damage assessment. I need to know how effective this device was, said Rocky.
We have a geosynchronous unit up and running. We should be able to get an EMP map from it, provided everything we have in the house is still working, said the general.
It should be. This facility is built to take a 20-megaton pulse as long as we're outside the blast zone, said Rocky.
Andy, do you have that pulse map from the GO3 unit ready? Asked the general.
Yes, ma'am. I had to do some modifications to the IR imaging as it was designed to pick up launch events. I figured the infrared patch of the blast would be proportional to the EMP. After all, it has to get about 5,000 degrees when the X-rays are generated. That should be bright enough to see with that unit.
There is the 3D model of the blast, said Andy, expanding the screen.
That's not a fizzle, but it isn't very large, considering the lay of the land down there, said Mr. Larson.
I've seen enough of these tests. My guess is it was less than 3 kilotons. That's smaller than Hiroshima, but also it was on the ground, so the blast zone is somewhat similar, said Rocky.
Where's Yuri? Yuri, give us a hand here, will you? Asked Mr. Larson.
I'm here. What can I do? Asked Yuri.
Take a look at this model.
Can the grid handle this? Asked Mr. Larson.
It doesn't look so big, but when it comes to control electronics, it's more about the frequency and the amplitude than the actual blast.
What I mean to say is that the pulse can be very damaging, even though the blast is not very damaging, said Yuri.
How do we find out? How much time do you need to find out if they will be okay? Asked Mr. Larson.
We have a network in the 2-meter band.
10 minutes if everyone's listening. All the plants have it, said Yuri.
Get with the airmen back there and give me a damage assessment, said Rocky.
I think it's time we move some assets to find out who's behind this broadcast, said Mr. Larson.
I have a feeling our little Camp Sour Grapes over there at Obamaville might be a good place to start, said Rocky.
Feeling? Well, there may be hope for you yet, Rock, said Mr. Larson.
Sir, there is a broadcast leader signaling a 10-minute warning on the satellite feed, all channels, including radio, sir, said Lanny.
All channels? That is presidential authority. Where is that studio coming from? I assume it's live, said Rocky.
Unknown origin. Unknown if it's live, said Lanny.
Andy, can you hack that broadcast? Can you stop it? Asked Rocky.
Oh, it's on now. I always wanted to hack the EAS, said Andy, again raising his workstation up to standing height.
You see what's happening, don't you? Asked Mr. Larson.
I think we're witnessing coup two, said Rocky.
Agent Larson? Rocky? I have what you wanted, I think. I borrowed one of your technicians. We found the money trail. It appears we are being attacked on a very high level, sirs. I think there is a group of elites who are about to take the airwaves and seize control of the country, said Herbert.
How high? Asked Rocky.
I traced about $1.5 trillion behind this syndicated group of interests. They have been associated for a long time.
The IRS actively covered up billions in asset transfers between foreign and national nonprofit accounts. Acting like financial SWAT teams, they audited entire law firms and news organizations out of existence who tried to expose this years ago. It seems this syndicate has been skimming money from drug cartels and numerous national treasuries to accumulate enough money to literally buy all the channels and all the networks using shell corporations all owned by a few people. Oh yeah, one more thing. It appears that some of the money went to satellite component suppliers for North Korea. I have the list, said Herbert. That's what I need. Agent Larson, would you do the country a service and have all of these individuals arrested and transported to Gitmo as soon as possible? Asked Rocky. We'll have to utilize a tribunal to try them under the RICO Act, said Mr. Larson. I like the sound of that. In the meantime, can someone please find the president for me? Asked Rocky. Neither one of your requests are going to be easy, said Mr. Larson. We have just been attacked by North Korea, plus actions that look like they were coordinated with this attack. Without the executive and his cabinet, we're left on our own. So this is how we prosecute enemies of the state, said Rocky, pressing his point like a jag. I just want you to know, we're in the realm of a constitutional crisis, said Mr. Larson. Sir, I have traced what I could for the ham radio pings for this signal. It's global. Whoever it is, they're addressing the world in about 7 minutes. The source appears to be in Pennsylvania. Sort of, said Andy. What do you mean, sort of? Is it or isn't it? Said Rocky. It has the ISP of Camp David, but it's coming from a hilltop dish about 7 miles away, said Andy. Site R. Those bastards are using our own Site R as their base of operations, said Rocky. That's supposed to be impregnable, said Lanny. Oh, it is. It's a damn city underground built in the 40s to withstand everything. It was upgraded by the Obama administration for unknown reasons on some kind of black budget, said Rocky. What about the antenna? Can't we just blast the antenna and stop the uplink? Asked Andy. General, can we get something airborne over that area in 7 minutes? Asked Rocky. No way. We have pinnacle protocols that have to be run after a blast like this. We cannot know what circuits have been affected. It will be at least days before we can run coordinated ops. Maybe we can get something fixed wing up, but that's it, said the general. This probably means the whole stock market, banks, and retail systems will be down as well, said Rocky. For sure, the blockchain systems will be down and the ACH transactions. But people can still use cash, said Herbert. Yeah, right. Who has cash? Asked Rocky. In any case, there is nothing that can stop these guys from taking over the world in the next few minutes, said Andy. I refuse to believe that. There is no way these guys can just take the airwaves over and turn a blank page in the history book and write their own version of the future, said Rocky. Once they make this move, any effort to unseat them will be seen by the public as a revolution. The whole world is watching us right now. You know that, don't you? Asked Hannah. I want Marines at Camp David as soon as we can get them safely deployed. I don't care if they have to ride horses, said the general. And can we at least get an E-18G Growler in the air out of Virginia Beach? It could be there in minutes. That's one way to blank out a broadcast. We've never used one of those jammers in America, but it should work if we can get it airborne, said Rocky. Sir, I have some sound coming over the broadcast. It's music, sir, said the airman monitoring the airwaves. Music? Oh, hell no. This is a rally. They're going to make this official. They're going to take over the country right before our eyes, and we're stuck here. Jesus! Will somebody please give me some intel? Shouted Rocky. I have some good news, Rocky, said Yuri, coming around the corner of the cubicle complex. That's what I'm talking about, said Rocky. All of our nuclear stations have X-ray and gamma-ray detectors. It appears that this device was detonated, but there are half dozen nodes to the pulse. I don't know much about bombs, but I do know about fusion reactions. It looks like the neutron enrichment system was flawed. The timing of the injectors was all over the place. The reaction was a series of fizzles and never really reached its potential. It was stronger than a dirty bomb, but not the EMP weapon they hoped it would be, I am sure. All systems suffered communication damage, but the hardened control circuits survived on all stations. All the plants shut down safely under their own power, said Yuri. Shut down? So half the country is dark? Asked Rocky. Yes, sir, but it is restorable in a matter of hours if we can check out the substations. The substations need to go through insulation tests and some small PCB replacements, but the large equipment that is hard to replace, it's all intact, said Yuri. Jack, I need you to make a run to Mr. Knorr. We have been attacked by an outside force, but those responsible are inside our country, and they mean to conduct an insurrection in 5 minutes. It's clear now that they have been planning this event for quite some time, but the 2016 election loss caused them to rush things up. The fact that they panicked and pushed it so fast is probably why they made some mistakes. I think they planned on Hillary being president and nuking us as part of their takeover of the states. This wasn't supposed to happen for a while yet, said the general. I'm ready to go. What do you want me to tell him? Asked Jack. Jack, here's the thing. This syndicate has been moving money for decades. They've been killing witnesses, arming terrorists, and seriously meant for this device to blind us long enough for them to take away the rest of our rights. We were too blind to see it, but Knorr wasn't. He knows what they are planning, and he knows what comes next. I have limited forces out there, and I need to know where to go to save this republic. Go ask him that, and bring me the answer, said the general. Why don't you go with me? You ask him, said Jack, standing with her hands on her hips in front of the general. I can't. I don't have time to tell you why. You follow this order or you don't. That's it, said the general. I'll go. As long as Major Meade goes with me, said Jack. Meade, get over here. You're going with Jack. Fastest means possible. Got it? Asked the general, pointing at her. Yes, general, said Jack, loosely saluting with a slight smile. Let's go, Miss Rousseau, said Major Meade as the Marine opened the inner security door leading to the halls of the Pentagon. Jack and the Major ran out the door into the hall, but the Major turned right instead of left. Hey, the shortest way is left, said Jack, skidding to a stop. She said fastest means, and the halls are pretty much empty on this level. I'll show you something, she said. He said, motioning to her as he opened a roll-up door that faced the hallway. What's in there? Asked Jack as she walked quickly up to the doorway. It's for first aid transportation in the building. It's kind of an electric ambulance. They've never been used, as far as I can tell. Come on, it's easier than running, said the Major as he yanked the cord out of the wall receptacle and sat in the driver's seat of the two-seater flatbed cart. Looks like the ones on the sidelines of the football game, said Jack, sitting down and putting her feet against the shelf in front of her. The very same company. Hold on, said the Major as the car whined out into the hallway and turned left. It was actually very fast at full speed, and the tires squealed as he made the first turn to the next inner ring. The cart made all the turns and would have been quite dangerous if there were pedestrians. Within 3 minutes, they walked through the doorway into the office alcove of Raymond Knorr. We came as fast as we could. The device blew up, but it was not as bad as it could have been. And there is someone at Camp David who's getting ready to make an announcement, except it's not the good guys, said Jack, speaking as fast as she could. Major Meade shrugged his shoulders as though to say he didn't have anything to add. And you need to know what they are planning, correct? Asked Mr. Knorr without getting up out of his chair or raising his voice. Sir, both Air Force presidential jets are down. One is damaged in Greenland, but all hands are safe on the ground. The other is MIA over the Gulf. We have no location or word from the president, said the major. Whatever you do, do not destroy the antenna at Site R. That network was hardened by the syndicate and set aside for this purpose. It is supposed to work when nothing else works, said Mr. Knorr. But the cell towers are down, and all the networks are controlled by them, sir, said the major. Major, please, let me talk to Jack for a moment. Have a seat. Jack, tell General Banks not to harm the radio network. Let their broadcast begin as planned. Do not interfere with it. Modern cell phones have radio receivers in them, and they will pick up the audio broadcast. Let them build the audience, and let them proceed with confidence, said Mr. Knorr. But, sir, I have to agree with Major Meade on this one. This syndicate means to take over the country. This is their shot, said Jack, still standing. Don't harm the antenna. Don't jam the signal. Let them have confidence. Be ready to make your arrests on the Camp David tunnel entrance to Site R. When they open the door, send in your officers in D portal and cut off their retreat. They will all be in that tunnel. No reporters. No escape, said Mr. Knorr. What presidential tunnel? I've been to Site R a few times. There are only two entrances, said Major Meade. There is another, smaller tunnel 6.7 miles long that stretches to Camp David in the forest. You'd never see it coming in through Portal A or B. Do you trust me? Asked Mr. Knorr. I trust you. Let's go, Major. Thank you, sir. For everything, said Jack, touching her right cheek with her hand and smiling at him. Save the world, Jack, said Mr. Knorr, smiling back at her. Sir, the music has stopped, said the airman monitoring the radio feed. I can hear that. Jesus Christ, will someone shoot that damn antenna? Asked Rocky, raising his voice. I have a growler in the air out of Virginia Beach, and we scrambled a Reaper out of Dulles. But they're both 30 minutes minimum from getting there, said the general. Does anyone have a field report from Ground Zero? Asked Mr. Larson. Negative. Everything is dark, and it will be another 90 minutes until we have a satellite image from that area, said Lanny. I don't know why they're doing this. Who's going to hear it? And with most of the electricity down for half the freaking country, asked Rocky. You said it right there, Rocky. Half the country will hear it just fine. The half that voted for Hillary, said Hannah. Jeepers shit. You're right. The grid a few hundred miles west of Nashville is just fine. California will hear it, said Rocky. They will probably just loop it once it starts going out. By then, the word of mouth will beat it to the East Coast, said Lanny. My fellow Americans, please stand by for an emergency broadcast from the acting President of the United States, came the male voice across the radio. Who is that? Whose voice is that? Asked Rocky. I believe that would be Eric Holder, the former Attorney General, said Mr. Larson. I thought that guy was in jail for that Fast and Furious thing, said Hannah. Oh, yeah, like that was ever going to happen. Contempt of Congress is one notch down from a diplomatic parking violation on K Street, said James, walking up to hold Hannah's hand. She smiled at him as she considered cutting off her dreadlocks and having kids with this man. Good evening, my fellow Americans. I know we have got a little sidetracked since the election, but I am here to tell you that everything will soon be back in control. A short time ago, the United States was brutally attacked by the rogue nuclear state of North Korea. After more than a year of antagonization and threats made by Donald Trump, I cannot tell you how it breaks my heart to witness this destruction. Unfortunately, during this counterattack by North Korea, the president and his cabinet were tragically lost over the Gulf of Mexico a few minutes ago. as I was the candidate with the most votes in the most recent election, I have agreed to serve out the remainder of the current term as your president, and hopefully my cabinet will restore the stability and rule of law the global community has come to respect and honor as the United States of America. For too long, we have been divided and focused only on the success of the wealthy, while ignoring the working people of this nation. For too long, we have succeeded while our neighbors to the south suffered in poverty. We simply could not allow a wall to be built between our peoples. We belong together, working and living side by side, to live in harmony in a global community. That is why I have instructed my Secretary of Homeland Security to immediately begin dismantling the Trump wall of disgrace and rebuilding the bridge of citizenship for the millions of good, hard-working people contributing great value to our communities across the nation. We will need to recover quickly from this tragic attack, and to facilitate that, I have asked my new FCC commission to restore net neutrality, guaranteeing high-speed access to all and the safety of data available to everyone. We will crack down on cybercrime, fake news, and subversive and limitless and divisive hate speech inspired by Donald Trump against the people of color across this nation. I have also asked my secretaries of the IRS and the U.S. Treasury to right the ship and stop the sinking of America's economy by providing a decent living wage for all Americans and the recovery of trillions of dollars held in foreign banks by the world's wealthiest capitalists. This money will be used to repair our bridges, roads, and airports, creating millions of new high-paying jobs. And as a part of my rapid recovery stimulus, the U.S. federal government will forgive all of its student loans nationwide. This will be the largest single investment in the future brain trust of America in history, said the female voice in a polished but wholly irritating tone. "Somebody get me a gun," said Rocky. "You think you're going to run over there and shoot the microphone?" "You'll never get there," said Hannah. "No, I want to stick it in my mouth. I can't stand to listen to another word of this treason," said Rocky. "Do you think anyone is actually listening to this crap?" asked Hannah. "You don't know D.C. like I do. Trust me, there is champagne popping all over the world right now," said James. "Oh, my God, they're back. What did he tell you?" asked the general as Jack and Major Meade entered the room through the secure vault's inner door. "Don't hurt the antenna. That's what he said. There's supposed to be some kind of broadcast," said Jack, almost out of breath. "Yeah. Tell us about it. We've been listening to this shit for what seems like an hour already," said Rocky, again rubbing his short hair with the palms of his hands. "Huh? What do you mean? I thought the bomb," started Jack. "It wasn't as powerful as they wanted it to be. Power's out, but according to Yuri, all the power plants will be up and running in a few days. The damage was widespread, but pretty simple to fix," said James. "Are you sure of what you heard?" asked the general. "She's telling you the truth," said the major. "You were there? You heard what he said?" asked the general. "Yes, I was," said the major. "Rocky, don't touch that antenna," said the general. "You hear that sound, general? That is the sound of the United States of America taking her last breath," said Rocky. "She's still breathing. The thing that makes me mad is that we knew this was possible, but we couldn't do anything to stop it," said the general. "It's not exactly accurate, general. The Department of Justice had over a year to bring charges against the leaders of this syndicate. They chose not to, for whatever reasons. Not even the president could get them to impanel a grand jury and make arrests. The elites
hid behind our desire for a peaceful transition of power. It took advantage of our decency, said Mr. Larson. Is that against the rules? Asked Jack. That's a better question than you know, Jack, said Mr. Larson. She's probably had a great history teacher, said James. Now, we're paying the price for that refusal to prosecute, said Rocky. Wheat and tares, my brother. There's a time for harvest in all things, said Mr. Larson. Now you're sounding like Knorr. I have wanted this insurrection stopped for a long time, said Rocky. Wait, didn't you say these creeps were in some place called Site R? My dad used to joke about those super resort bunkers. He used to say, beat the rush, get in your bunkers now, lock the door, and we'll take it from here. Aren't these guys in a bunker? Asked Jack. Yes. Well, it's kind of the mother of all bunkers, said Mr. Larson. And let's not forget, Obama poured tons of cash and resources into that underground city. I think this was all part of the plan. So you can bet they could hold off an army for years down there, said Rocky. Well, that's what Jack is saying, if I heard her dad's words right. While they're in that fortress, they can't run the world. They're missing the party, said Mr. Larson. That's right. Who can run the world from jail? Asked Jack. Right now they're doing a good job of it. The people out there, in the dark, want answers. I hate that this is the only voice they hear, and right now it has to sound like angels from heaven to them, said Rocky. I'm with Knorr on this, said Jack. I know you are, Jackie. He's a great man, and I wish military people could work directly with him. I know I shouldn't say anything about this, but we're kind of at the end of the world here, said Rocky, looking toward the floor. The hell we are. I refuse to surrender. I've been fighting this syndicate my whole life. I have men and women face up in Arlington because of these animals. Just because she has the bully mic right now does not give them victory, said the general. That being said, the one thing that separates us from evil is the policy that Raymond Knorr and the others like him here among us do not command arms against humans. I just want it known that without Jack, we would be blind and lost, said Rocky. I knew it the moment I met you, Jack. Some people are just set aside to do a certain thing. You've gotten closer, Knorr, than any of us ever could have, said the general. I didn't do anything on purpose. He's just nice to me, said Jack. Well, I can't see the future like he does. Tommy was the golden boy before you were born, but then 9/11 happened, and it seemed like half our Constitution was set adrift at sea, said the general. Hey, all of that was written before I was born, that's for sure, said Mr. Larson. That may be true, but Americans would never have accepted losing that much freedom in that short amount of time without that attack on the World Trade Centers, said Rocky. Yeah, who was really behind that anyway, asked Jack. Same people as today, said the general. The Saudis? Asked Jack. Look at it this way, Jack. America defied the power that ran the world for thousands of years, and we were successful because humans were meant to be free. But they wanted back, and they will stop at nothing to get it, said Mr. Larson. And Hillary is the person who's supposed to have this power? Asked Jack. Oh, hell no. Her cold ambition is just a tool of the real power. She'll be betrayed and rot in front of our eyes once this coup is done. There is another behind her that will turn this place into a nightclub if given half a chance, said Rocky. And who is that? Asked Jack. The room fell silent, long enough for the silence to become painful. We can't say it, Jack. It's not that we don't have our suspicions, but the very thought of it betrays what little faith we have left. That someone is out there hoping we get it right, said Mr. Larson. You mean someone that's close to Hillary? Asked Jack. This much we know for sure. If there was anyone who even smelled of succession, she would have killed them on the spot. Those two have made a deal much darker than anyone knows. But they have risen to this throne because they trust absolutely no one, said the general. Besides, the oath and covenant they had to make for this type of charm of favor requires unspeakable acts of debauchery. No one your age should ever hear of such things, said Mr. Larson. For real? Asked Jack. Absolutely for real, said Mr. Larson.
Sir, I'm getting something on the foxtrot band, said the airman.
We know, airman. We've been listening until we're ready to puke. Thank you for turning the volume down, by the way, said Rocky.
No, sir, not the site R signal. This is the foxtrot band reserved for the president, said the airman.
What's the code? Can you decipher it? Asked Rocky.
Sir, they're not sending code. They're using the band to broadcast voice.
It's the Secretary of State, sir, said the airman.
Put it on speaker, said Rocky.